At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So, Wes, we've been to a distillery that we really had a good time at.
I've been to a lot of distilleries I had a good time at.
One of them, Uncle Nearest, mm-hmm. is facing a $108 million lawsuit.
What?
$108 million.
That's quite a few dollars.
That is a few dollars. And if you want to hear the details and what the likely outcome is going to be, then stick around.
Okay. Before we get into that breaking news, we need to thank the patrons first.
We sure do.
Because they are the reason we are on this platform, whether you're watching on YouTube or Spotify or listening on any of the podcast streaming platforms. It's all made possible by our patrons. And so those names you see on the screen right now, don't get too jealous. They're just in the top few tiers of the patron packages. We have a ton of them. So there's lots of options. We'll tell you more about it at the end of the show, but we can't start without thanking you guys. So thanks.
So for those of you out there that are maybe not super familiar with the Uncle Nearest brand, pretty awesome origin story.
Yeah, really cool.
So back in the 1800s, there was a slave named Nathan Uncle Nearest Green. Mm. And Nearest Green was rented out by his slave owner to a Baptist minister who somehow felt that it was moral for him to rent slaves but not own slaves.
You know.
And as is the case back then, Baptist ministers also were farmers. In that area of the country, and as was the case, they had to convert their grain into whiskey so that it would preserve its value and they could sell it someplace else. Mm-hmm. And Nearest role was to convert the minister's grain into whiskey.
Not a bad job.
And
making whiskey.
So there, at the time, young Jack Daniel's father died in the Civil War. And his stepmother was not a huge fan, so she turned him over as a ward to the Baptist minister. And the Baptist minister basically put him in the care of Nearest.
Oh, nice.
And so Jack Daniels was working in the little mm-hmm. distillery there. And Nearest had a son that was Jack Daniels' age named George. And they grew up together.
George and Jack.
Yeah, George and Jack. Nice. And there was always this photo that caused a lot of questions that the Jack Daniels distillery... there's two interesting elements about it. Hopefully you can find the photo and put it up
there. Yeah, we'll put it up here.
So one thing you notice is that Jack Daniels is standing and everyone else is sitting, but they're the same height. And it's because he was diminutive and he didn't want to look short. So he stood while everyone else sat. And the other thing is at his right hand is an African-American. And at that time in the United States, that would have been odd, especially in that area of Tennessee. And so... we later found out that that was actually his best friend, and Jack Daniels was probably not racist at all.
Right, yeah.
and that individual was actually involved in the early startup of the Jack Daniels distillery. And so when all of that information came out, it was pretty obvious that he had been erased from Jack Daniels' history due to racial motivations. Lim Motlow was Jack Daniels' nephew.
Yeah.
He took over the brand because Jack Daniels died with no sons or no heirs. He took over the brand after Prohibition. And basically, he was a known racist and probably erased any history of African Americans being involved. And so when Nearest descendants found out about this history, they ended up creating the whiskey company Uncle Nearest in 2016. So that's kind of the backstory.
Yeah, really cool distillery.
Yeah.
I mean, when we went there, it's like an old horse farm or ranch or something. It's like horse stables, beautiful landscape, just a really cool spot.
Yeah, and when we were there, it's kind of impressive how large scale the operation was. I mean, they went big from the start.
Yeah, yeah.
So that horse racing ranch was 300 acres. That's where they started. I mean, most distilleries start off with some little bitty place and then they grow into that. They were sourcing whiskey from Dickel and a very secretive company called Tennessee Distilling Group, TDG. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so TDG makes a lot of the single barrels that you'll get from Heaven's Door, Bob Dylan's brand. Mm-hmm. It's real cinnamon forward. And then Dickel has that B vitamin note that I noticed, but some people taste, yeah, you know, whatever. And they blend those two together to make the Uncle Nearest releases. And they started off with $100 million in capital.
Not a bad start.
Not a bad start.
That'll get you a horse rancher.
That'll get you going for sure. Hey, nice hat.
Hey, thanks. Nice lanyard.
Nice rocks glass.
Thanks, man. Nice travel case.
Nice blend topper.
Thank you. Nice candle.
Nice bottle bag.
Thanks, man. That's a nice tumbler.
Nice woman's t-shirt.
Oh, thanks. Nice extra schmedium shirt.
Get yourself some nice things and get all the compliments that come along with it. Shop bourbonrealtalk.com.
The bank has made some claims, right? Okay. And they claim that they're in default on this $108 million worth of loans, and they are suing for receivership.
Okay, so real quick, receivership, what is that?
So we're mostly familiar, and a lot of people confuse receivership with bankruptcy.
Okay.
And so receivership is when a creditor goes to the courts and say, courts, we need you to take control of this business away from the people who are running it because we're owed all this money. Okay. And we don't believe that the way that they're running the business is proper, and we think that you need to take control or we're going to lose our investment.
Yeah.
Bankruptcy is the opposite direction. Bankruptcy is where the creditor goes to the bankruptcy court and says, hey, these creditors, they're on me. I've got a good plan to turn things around, or I'm just going to liquidate either way. I just want you to get them off of me while I go through this process.
Okay.
Right? And this was where the creditors actually pursued, and they're asking for the courts to basically take over control.
Okay.
The other option that Uncle Nearest had was to file Chapter 11, where they'd have to file, they'd go to the courts and say, hey, get these guys off me. I'm going to show you my turnaround plan.
Okay.
Right?
A turnaround.
And the problem with that is that the courts can reject your turnaround plan. Okay. Right? And so...
So under the receivership, they would actually be removed.
They'd be removed.
Okay. So the owners, the ownership, all the higher level.
The courts would find somebody probably from the whiskey industry that had experience operating a business during difficult times to come in and start running the business.
Gotcha.
Right. Okay. And so that's kind of the difference, because we have some other episodes coming out that are about distilleries that file bankruptcy. Some of them are 7s, some of them are 11s. Mm. Some are trying to save it. Some of them are just like, we're just going to sell everything off and pay everybody the best that we can. Mm. But this was a situation where Uncle Nearest would not take the actions that the creditor wanted. Mm-hmm. The creditor probably would have preferred that they file bankruptcy, because then there is a trustee that oversees all of their behaviors and makes sure that anything that they're doing doesn't erode their position in the business, right?
Makes sense.
And so they probably would have preferred, but because they were just not doing anything, the creditor said, okay, let's go have the courts take over.
Yeah. So what's kind of the bank's claim here? Obviously, they get their owed the money, but above and beyond that.
There were a number of claims that came out. So the bank, first of all, is a Louisville-based bank. It's Farm Credit Mid-America.
Okay.
And they're known for loaning money inside the bourbon industry. It's kind of one of their specialties. They filed their lawsuit on July the 28th. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know when this is going to come out, but it was just not too long ago.
Yeah, just a few weeks
ago. Just a couple weeks ago. They claim that they're in default on $108 million worth of loans, and they've been in default since January of 2024.
Oh, okay.
And so what's interesting about that is they're like, bro, we've been trying for over a year and a half to resolve this. This is a last-ditch effort to try and make sure that we're taking care of
it. Surprises last that long.
Now, they also claim that the distillery just wasn't responding to information requests. So they're like, we're willing to work with you, but you got to give us the information so we can see that you're doing the right things.
Okay.
Another interesting thing, they actually didn't just sue the company. They are also suing Fawn and Keith Weaver individually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Above and beyond it. They're the owners, right?
Right. They are the executives, founders, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But they've made some claims against Keith and Fawn specifically, saying that they've misappropriated some funds, mm-hmm. and that they should also be personally liable for these debts because of what they did with the money.
Okay, so what are they claiming they did with the money?
One big public thing is they bought a $2.2 million home in Martha's Vineyard.
Very modest, I understand.
Very modest. And so, you know, you can imagine, you know, you've got this person that's all of a sudden the face of this, like,
yeah.
huge brand. There's tons of media attention because of the, you know, the racial implications of righting this wrong from, you know... the early 1900s, late 1800s, and we're finally getting the truth out there and all that stuff. And before the company even starts making money, they start living that Martha's Vineyard lifestyle, right?
You got to. I mean, every successful distillery starts with your first purchase being a nice house on Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, every successful distillery requires a mansion in Martha's
Vineyard. At least $2 million.
At least
$2 million. They kind of went in low, I'd say.
You know, and honestly, at about $1.5 billion, you should assume your business is going to fail. You need the bigger house.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the distillery also, according to the bank, overstated the value of their inventory, which was basically barrels, by $21 million. Mm. They also claimed that they sold barrels to pay liabilities that were due to other creditors. Not to them.
So even some of the barrels they claimed value in, they were already going to sell off for other collateral.
You were on the right rabbit trail. I think you're going to see why those two factors in alignment with one another.
Okay.
They also claim that they factored their receivables without permission.
Okay. So what does that mean?
Factoring receivables. So yeah. Basically, if you're a business, right? And you have you've sold product, but you sell product on terms. So typically in the liquor industry, you will allow your wholesaler to pick up your bottles and they don't have to pay you for 30 days, typically.
Okay, yeah.
Okay? And so you've got $1 million worth of receivables that are due in the next 30 days, mm-hmm. But you need money today. And so there are kind of banks that are out there. They go, hey, we'll buy your $1 million worth of receivables for $900,000 right now. Mm. Now, when that $1 million comes in, we're going to keep that $100,000. That's our profit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so the Farm Credit Mid-America says, you know, these receivables that we were owed on, mm-hmm. because we generated those receivables with the original loan that we gave them.
Yeah.
They went out and borrowed money against those again, sold them at a discount, and all of that already belonged to us.
Oh, so there are multiple sources of loans and collaterals that they're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay, this is really
another element that came out was that in their bank loan, it stated that, hey, we're going to give you this $108 million, but whatever you do with it, it has to increase the value of the company.
Yeah.
You can't spend it and it decrease the value of the company. Mm. So your net worth always has to be at least equal to or greater than the loan balance. And they claim that they failed to maintain that. Mm-hmm. And so based on all that, they said, we need the court to appoint a receiver because, and I quote, okay, because based on our reading of this situation, this situation requires an adult in the room.
Ooh.
So the bank basically said in court, the Weavers are behaving as a child would if you gave them access to a bank account.
Yeah. So there's a lot of claims against these Weaver folks and their distillery. But mm-hmm. what are their claims? Like, what is their reasoning or, I guess, excuses for all of this misallocation of funds and all that?
So it's interesting because when you hear public claims, because Fawn has gone online and she's released some videos. And then there are court transcripts of things that Keith has said mm-hmm. in the hearings and whatnot. And basically everything that they're saying is that the distillery is on a path to success. Everything is fine.
Of course.
They're just facing some cash flow issues, mm-hmm. right? They're basically saying like, hey, we're profitable. We're good. It's just that we're just waiting for the cash to come in.
Yeah.
Right. And he also said in court, you know, basically, Judge, you don't need to worry because we are still solvent. Right.
Hmm. Yeah. Which means their value exceeds their liabilities they have out there.
Basically, yeah, he's saying we still have enough value.
Yeah.
To cover everything that we owe everybody.
Now, what are they saying about their little shack on Martha's Vineyard? Like, what's their excuse for that?
So they actually claim, and I believe them, that they were authorized by Farm Credit Mid-America to buy that house.
Oh, really?
They said that it was part of the plan.
Part of the plan?
They explained to him, like, we're going to buy this house, we're going to host industry events here, and it's going to help grow the brand.
Okay.
So far as I can tell, Farm Credit Mid-America does not dispute that fact.
Mm.
And so they're like, hey, not only did they know we were going to buy it, but in 2023, the bank officers actually came and visited us there.
Yeah.
And so they fully knew about the house, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other big thing, because, you know, this claim that they were overstated the value of their inventory by $21 million. Fawn says, hey, we are not criminals. We didn't have anything to do with this. We are victims in this situation.
Yeah,
we are victims of fraud,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what they said was that they had a former CEO named Mike Senzanke?
Wazowski? Wazowski?
Yeah. Well, yeah, basically we'll Mike Wazowski.
Yeah. Super good guy.
Yeah.
Great with money.
Who overstated the collateral and that the Weavers had nothing to do with it. They didn't even know he was doing it.
Mm.
They said, we fired him. We are doing an internal investigation. We're gathering information. And we're going to turn it over to the authorities. They said the SEC and also another federal entity, and that they're not perpetrators or co-conspirators. This guy did all of this stuff on their own, and he should be held accountable.
Yep.
And so
we just got this real nice house. We don't even know how it happened.
Yeah. Well, they knew that they were going to buy the house with the money, but
yes,
you know
their quotes,
right? But well, and the bank didn't dispute that.
But
there's some other information that came out later that we're going to talk about in a second that
mm-hmm.
that makes that a little more nefarious than it seems on the surface. So
yeah.
Keith basically told the judge that placing them under receivership would kill the brand because the brand is nothing without Fawn. Mm. She is the face of the brand.
Yeah.
He said it would be catastrophic to the judge.
Yeah, and if they're saying that they can turn it around, you take her out of it, there's no hope of turning
there's
it
no
around.
Hope of turning it around is what Keith
That's
told
That's what
the
he's
judge.
Saying, yeah.
yeah. So,
such a great husband.
Yeah, so those are the facts as publicly stated that we know so far. So let's...
Okay, so we've got a group of people in a bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
They own or part of owning and running a distillery.
Yep.
Now, there's someone else here who's also been a part of running a distillery and a brand,
mm-hmm.
and that is you. So what are your thoughts, kind of thinking from their perspective, the bank's perspective, all these perspectives, what are your assessment on everything?
Okay, that's a good question. So let's talk about two brands that started off with $100 million. Uncle Nearest.
Okay.
And a vodka brand called Deep Eddie's.
Okay.
Now, everybody who wants to be an independent bottler and grow your brand to an enormous size and sell it for hundreds of millions of dollars in just a few years, all cite Deep Eddie's.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I've had the advantage of talking to one of the attorneys that was involved in the Deep Eddie's process.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, one attorney, but it was a business associate.
Yeah.
So he had inside information.
Okay.
And he said that it was started by a billionaire who set aside $100 million. And his goal
mm-hmm.
was to lose $100 million in 5 years, growing volume.
Mm.
Okay.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, Baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Okay.
And so if you have money, if you're going to lose money to build brand width and depth in the market,
mm-hmm.
right? The best way to do it is to sell your product at a price that probably your competitors can't afford. You may actually be losing money.
Mm-hmm.
and spending a ton of money on all types of sales incentive programs, local sales reps that represent your brand and all that stuff. And that's what Deep Eddy did. Mm. Okay. So that they had built up a network that was so large that somebody else that was going to come in and strip out all that expense and could get to market for cheaper because they were larger, saw enough value in it that you sell for $350 million.
Yeah.
What you probably shouldn't do is rely on the face of one individual thinking, hey, this person's so famous and so popular that all they have to do is tell people to drink this whiskey and they will.
Yeah.
Because I'm not as famous as Fawn Weaver, but I do have a pretty large whiskey following on YouTube. And I got to tell you, it meant almost nothing to the Prideful Kill. Mm-hmm. Almost nothing. I mean, I could do a handful of single barrels per year and all that stuff. But when you're talking about growing an international brand that's the size of Uncle Nearest, that requires a whole lot more than a famous face.
Right, yeah.
And so the argument that she has to be involved or it's all going to fall apart, I don't buy that.
Well, I mean, how many houses on Martha's Vineyard does Eddie have?
Well, he was already a billionaire, so I don't know.
Okay.
But he wasn't using...
He probably owns Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, and he wasn't paying a creditor interest on the $100 million.
He didn't need to borrow no
money. Just had it. He just threw it up there.
That's cool.
Right,
when you just have $100 million in like disposable, like, hey, I'm going to try to lose this in 5 years.
Yeah, and it worked. He sold for $350.
I could probably do that with $100.
Yeah, okay, maybe. I could turn $100 into $350. If we went to the casino and I had a good run on the blackjack table,
let's
maybe.
Let's go. All right.
I don't know. It's happened before.
Next bottle share coming to Windstar.
Yeah, there you go.
Hit us up, Windstar.
So from my perspective, it kind of makes sense that the creditor wanted to remove the Weavers because they had already sold some barrels. It didn't say whether or not they sold them at the value that they were on the books for, but chances are they didn't. Mm-hmm. And they used it to pay other creditors that were a lower level of priority. So I see why the creditor wants them removed. Yeah. And there is an order of priority. So if they had filed bankruptcy, the trustee would not have allowed them to distribute those funds that way.
Mm,
right.
Okay,
but when you're in a desperate situation, you realize this bank loan is too big to fail. Right. So they're probably not going to, you know, go through the process to shut us down because they know they're going to lose everything. But this little guy over here, he doesn't have as much to lose, and he can create a big stink that messes everything up. So even though I owe this person higher level of priority, I'm going to take money that kind of belongs to them and give it to this little guy over here, and that's going to stave off the immediate problem. So that's what it seems like was happening. Go ahead.
When I would, like, we're talking about, we know she has a famous face. We know she has some fame and is influential. But what really experience do they have to kind of justify being in this position that they found themselves in, given all of that experience and all that they've been through?
You know, it's kind of interesting because the judge pointed out that there were some problems with that logic.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
The judge actually said to Keith, "You appear to be out over your skis." So if you're skiing and you're over your skis, you tumble.
You're
right?
Gonna take a tumble. Yeah.
He's saying like you're on a black diamond and you need to be someplace else, right? And the reality is the Weavers didn't have distillery experience.
Okay.
And so you know if you start to ask yourself like, how did they start off with, you know, at the time it was one of the largest distilleries that had ever been launched.
Yeah.
No one.
Yeah. How do you go from not having a lot of experience to getting $108 million to start a distillery?
Right.
You got to think about the time period too.
2016. So bourbon was booming.
Right.
Right. But there was also a political climate at the time that, you know, it was starting to come out that there were these racial injustices and there was a lot of pressure on lending institutions and whatnot, that if you had the opportunity to use your lending power to kind of right some of these wrongs, you should.
Yeah.
And so it was a good political move for them to back this kind of play. And I think that it was kind of the perfect storm to go, okay, these people really aren't that experienced, but the story's really good and the markets seem to be really responsive to this type of stuff. So we're gonna bet big on this, right? And not that that was necessarily a bad idea, but you have to ask yourself, you've started a bunch of businesses. I've started a bunch of businesses. I've never gone to the bank and gone, hey, look at this overall big picture. Give me a bunch of money and I'm going to start living the lifestyle today.
Yeah.
That
of a billionaire.
That would normally be reserved until the business was actually producing enough profits mm-hmm. to justify that lifestyle,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so there is no doubt about it. The Weavers started living a million-dollar lifestyle long before the distillery was profitable enough to justify that. Mm-hmm. Along the lines of the thought that, you know, they found themselves in a situation that they maybe didn't have the experience for, mm-hmm. I've personally been told of a couple of public snafus that Fawn has engaged
really?
In.
Do tell. Spill the tea.
So there was one instance.
Spill the tea?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There spill was it. One instance. I'm not going to say who it was, but it was, there was a highlight being placed on like women and whiskey, and somebody that I knew was at this event.
Okay.
And there were luminaries from the Kentucky bourbon industry, and Fawn was making comments about the Lincoln County process, like basically flash aging the product, and that's why Tennessee whiskey was better than Kentucky whiskey.
Interesting. Never heard
and,
that.
And not only is that like blatantly untrue on its surface, which is shocking that somebody in her position would know that, but it also irritated other luminaries from the industry, and they're like, listen, you just got here.
Right.
You didn't necessarily earn your way into the position that you're in, and don't come up here and start preaching to us about, you know, things like this, especially right. when yeah. you're wrong. And so there's been a handful of things like that. She did some videos kind of trash talking tequila when tequila started getting popular, and that irritated a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So there's just been a handful of snafus like that.
Yeah.
And so when you put all that together, it seems like, you know, there is some evidence that they might be out over their skis.
Yeah, right? And they may not have the experience that one would want in loaning $108 million
to
start a distillery.
Yeah,
if you're not sure how the Lincoln County process works.
To the judge's credit, he did not immediately agree with the bank. Mm. And he's looking at both of them and saying, bank, you're the one that thought that they were a good loan risk.
That's
and now
true.
You want us to bail you out. And he actually said to Keith, he was like, you can talk all of this trash you want about your CFO, but he was your CFO. You
yeah,
hired
he
him.
He works for you.
Right?
Yeah.
And so another bit of information came out that influenced my opinion of the situation, which was the Weavers did have the authorization to buy the $2.2 million house.
Mm-hmm.
But it also came out that they recollateralized that home and borrowed another $1.5 million against it.
Really?
So basically, they went to Farm Credit Bureau and said, hey, you gave us $108 million. Cool with you if we spend 2.2, we're going to use it for these purposes. And they were like, yeah, sure, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But in their minds, that asset was now part of the collateral that was meant
right.
to protect their loan.
Mm-hmm.
So, but because it was a master loan agreement and not a typical mortgage, they were able to go to a mortgage company and say, hey, we want to cash out 1.5. We own this house cash. We mm-hmm. have no debt against this house, which was kind of not true.
Yeah.
And then the mortgage company loans 1.5 million. And now, if the house is still worth 2.2, which it probably isn't, but if it were, when the bank had $2.2 million worth of protection, now they only have $700,000 worth of protection.
Wow.
Right? And so that was something that came out, and I was like, well, you might have had permission to buy it, but what you did with the asset
that was a little shady.
Probably not as good.
Right.
Also in alignment with this idea that they borrowed money twice against the same asset.
Mm-hmm.
If they did factor their receivables, that is in effect a second time that they have borrowed money against the same asset, because those receivables
mm-hmm.
were already laid claim to by Farm Credit Mid-America.
Right.
Right. They expected that revenue that was generated was going to be used to pay back their loan.
Yeah.
And then they sold that asset to somebody else at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there, it looks like there's been multiple instances of them borrowing money against the same asset that was already collateralized on this loan.
Yeah.
So to me, it makes sense that the bank would say, hey, we need an adult in the room. These people are not making good choices and they're eroding our position.
So what could happen to this CFO and Fawn and Keith for that matter? But CFOs like this, I feel like when they commit fraud in a large companies, typically for themselves, but they end up going to prison, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you're a CFO and you're messing around and you get in trouble with the SEC or the State Department, you're going to federal prison.
Right.
And it's not that I haven't seen it. I've seen an outside CFO that was embezzling money and hiding it. And the way he hid it in his instance was he was hiding it in the payroll tax expenses.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ended up stealing $1.6 million from a company and he went to federal prison. And I was the one that discovered the fraud.
Hmm.
So in this particular instance, this CFO What he's been accused of is overstating the value of their barrel inventory. And okay. So then you have to ask yourself, why would he do that?
Right.
And the reason why he'd do that has already been revealed. They would be in default of their loan if their net worth wasn't greater than the loan balance.
Okay.
Right?
So he had to come up
and
with
so
the
if
somewhere.
He starts looking and he goes, remember earlier when I said we're going to come back to this? Mm-hmm. If he starts looking and he goes, oh, crap, we fire sold those barrels so that we could pay these other creditors. And now that I have to take this stuff off the books, when I send the records to the bank, they're going to go, oh, you're in default of the loan because you don't have enough assets anymore. And so what I have to do is say that the assets that we do have are actually worth $21 million more than they really are, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what seems to have happened in this situation. But the Weavers claim that they had no idea this was happening and the CFO committed fraud on his own and that they're victims.
Yep.
But he stood to gain nothing by committing this fraud. I mean, maybe
that's pretty strange.
Maybe if he reported it to the bank honestly and they saw that they were in default, he was going to lose his job. So maybe they could argue like he wanted to make things look better. But really, it just looks like the company itself was kicking the can down the road and hoping they would find a way to turn things around before the bank figured out that they had lied, right?
Yeah.
And so it makes it difficult for me to believe that they had no idea this was going on.
Right. Now, has the judge in this case taken any action yet? Like, has he or she? I don't know.
I think the judge is male.
Okay. Has he done anything to take any action on this, or is this kind of still in a limbo mode?
It's in limbo. One thing he did do was he said, okay, I'm not going to take control away from the Weavers just yet. Okay. I'm not ruling on that.
Okay.
But I am going to put an order in place that they're not allowed to sell off any more assets without court approval.
Assets, does that include whiskey or no?
I think the way that it's going to be structured is that they're able to bottle whiskey and sell to their through their normal business process.
Okay.
But they're not going to be able to factor receivables. They're not going to be able to sell barrel inventory to other non-distiller producers.
Okay.
I think they're allowed to operate normally, but they're not allowed to sell off assets, which is kind of receivership light, if you will.
Yeah.
You're not putting somebody else in charge, but you're putting some stop losses in place to make sure that they don't engage in the behavior that they were accused of there not being an adult in the room, right? And he's also, which I thought was funny, considering a gag order.
Because she is pretty, I mean, because they are pretty vocal.
Yeah,
on
she's been
media.
Pretty vocal on social media.
Yeah.
And so he said, look, I don't want to trample on anyone's First Amendment rights, but we may need to put a gag order in place. So he's considering that as well.
Okay.
And he kind of made fun of them for even needing it. If you read the transcript, he's like, do I really have to put in an order to keep your mouth shut?
Yeah.
And the court transcript said both sides shook their head yes.
Yes, yes, indeed.
So I thought that was interesting.
Is interesting.
So that's what's going on. I at this point, I can't predict exactly what's going to happen. I don't think the Uncle Nearest brand will go away. I don't know whether or not I believe the Weavers are the right people to turn this thing around. I don't know if receivership would be better.
Yeah.
But I think the Uncle Nearest brand is gonna be around for a long time, no matter what.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's awesome.
That's good for that legacy.
Yeah. And the story's incredible.
So unfortunately, I don't have any Uncle Nearest whiskey to give away.
Well, maybe you should start buying some to help support their court costs.
That's a possibility. What we decided to do, which is a little tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of a joke, because they've been accused of committing fraud to create success in the whiskey industry, we ask ourselves, who else has done that?
One of the most famous.
One of the most famous is George Remus, and I happen to have tons of Remus.
Let's give some of that away.
Get those Remus bottles out down there.
In honor of court cases and whiskey owners.
Yes. So George Remus was a famous bootlegger, the first person to represent himself in a temporary insanity case and win. And so we have some very nice bottles of Remus. So we're going to do 5 1-ounce sample packs that are going to include, I think I have Remus 2, 3, and 6, the Remus Repeal Reserve. And then I have the Gatsby Reserve and the Volstead Act.
Okay.
And so actually there's not enough Volstead Act. So let's say
5 half
three, 5 ounce. Three 1 ounce sample winners. I think there's 3 ounces in there.
Yeah.
3 1 ounce sample winners. And tell them what they have to do to win.
All right, there's a couple things you can do to enter into this beautiful giveaway, and they're all super easy things. So if you don't do them, shame on you. First thing you need to do is like this video. Mm-hmm. Second thing is super easy. Just hit the subscribe button if you haven't already, and then ring the bell. You want to make sure you ring the bell because every episode we give away free stuff. I mean, when I say free, I mean free. There's no hidden cost. You don't have to pay shipping. You don't have to subscribe to anything other than the YouTube channel that's going to cost you any money. So it's free stuff. We just want to give back to the community because that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. The last thing you want to do is go into the description, find the web form next to the Big Capital Words giveaway. Click on that. It's a Google form, real easy. Just gives your basic contact info, and we'll run that in our randomizer with everyone else who enters, and we'll get our winner absolutely free their whiskey. Mm-hmm. We'll ship it out to you. Chrissy Lynn will package it all up real pretty, send it right to you, end up on your doorstep, and there you go.
There you go. So we had some fun on this. Hopefully they have some fun. If you like this content and you want to support the channel, there's three different ways. Mm-hmm. You can buy merch at bourbonrealtalk.com. We have a lot of great things for whiskey lovers over there.
Yep.
Lots of opportunities for you to customize things because we have some lasers. Mm. We also have Patreon, which is a great way to support not only the creation of the content, but by extension, Wes and his ministry work and the Dominican Republic and Chrissy Lynn, who's a single mother. We are just always so grateful for that support. And then last but not least, I'm a real estate agent in the Dallas and Houston metro areas. So if you need residential real estate services in either market, please consider me. Mm-hmm. And you can find links for all three ways to support the channel in the video description next to the giveaway link.
Absolutely.
And if this is your first time tuning into the channel, we'd love to tell you a little bit about why we do what we do. And whiskey's great, but we're mostly about community and using whiskey as a conduit to bring people together. Mm-hmm. And that's something that became important to me when I lost my brother to suicide in 2014. And I started looking for ways that I could make a difference in individuals' lives. And I saw that the kinds of connections that people form around their hobbies were the kind of connections that keep people bound to this world. So we started the channel, but we needed a forum for people to interact. And a lot of the forums were filled with negativity.
Yeah, whiskey trolls.
We call the trolls. Mm-hmm. And those trolls taught us two things. One, we needed our own forum, which we have. It's Bourbon Real Talk Community. It's one of the world's largest Facebook-based bourbon groups, and it is troll-free, and it is free to join. The second thing that they taught us, though, is that if those individuals can hate strangers online, there's nothing that keeps us from loving strangers online, and that's why we end every episode the same way, and that's this. If you woke up this morning, you're unsure whether or not anyone loved you, just know that we love you. We'll see you next time on Bourbon Real Talk. Cheers.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.